Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil's grooving them rhythm and blues, that's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Hey, Souther. Welcome back.
Yeah, man. Welcome back to you as well.
Thanks.
We missed each other for 2 weeks.
I know. It's crazy.
It's a reunion.
It feels so good.
It does, man.
You were in Scotland last week when we were drinking scotch in here.
I know. That seems ironic. Did we plan it that way or?
I don't know, man. I think it just happens that way sometimes. Yeah,
such is life.
But it sounds like you're actually visiting a couple of distilleries we were drinking, like of the whiskey that we were drinking.
Yeah, you said you were drinking Aberfeldy 12. I was at the Aberfeldy Distillery. It was really charming, beautiful setting.
Cool, man.
You know, again, distilleries get kind of romanticized these days. They have like a little area for tourism.
Yeah.
But even if this place didn't have that, just the sheer setting of where it was located was kind of gorgeous.
Nice.
You know, Scottish rolling hillside, water flowing down the mountainside. Like, amazing. Just gorgeous.
Nice. Well,
a truly magical experience.
Very cool.
You know, it was like, I think we were just 8 or 10 kilometers from Hogwarts or something. I don't know. It was Scotland. It was great.
Cool, man. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
Why don't you introduce our guest today?
Yeah. So studio today, we've got our good friend Nick Korn coming down here from Boston. He runs an organization called Offsite, which does kind of big events up to and including. He does Thirst Boston every year up in Boston. So, hey, Nick, what's up?
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Glad to have you. Thanks for driving down just to be on the show and eat pizza.
I really just came for the pizza. Come on.
I think most of our guests just come for the pizza. And then there's this. Oh, hey, let's talk on the microphone. So what's going on? You're constantly a busy guy doing events all the time, and Thirst is coming up, right? When's Thirst?
It's the last week of April, so it's the 28th through 30th of April, just 2 weeks away.
Oof.
It's coming up real fast.
So you took a little time out of your busy schedule.
No, it's really relaxing. It pretty much just runs itself at this point.
Well, yes, so that's a bunch of bullshit. Let's talk about what that means. Like, I don't think I have a real clear vision of what it is you do as an what is the full title? Event coordinator, event planner, event maker, maker? What do you do?
One of my favorite pastimes is having my friends introduce me and explain what I do, because everyone sort of has a different understanding. So I'd love to hear your explanation.
I think you just did. Like, I just rambled and made up titles.
Yeah, it's pretty perfect. Exactly. so we do a lot of the work that we do is with brands, with like spirit companies and breweries. And essentially, a lot of them have trouble telling their story and specifically have trouble interacting with the bartending community. So I'm a bartender. I've worked in cocktail bars for like 10 years in Boston. And I think brands and bartenders really like want to work together. It's sort of like a middle school dance where they're like looking across the room and they have like that sexy brand that they want to go dance with, but they don't know how to start the conversation. So a lot of what we do is sort of like broker those relationships. And
so you're a pimp.
I said middle school dance. I don't know what you were up
to. Oh, okay.
It's all innocent.
Yeah.
Speaking of pimp, I didn't realize you were now working for the Travel Board of Scotland as opposed to the Milk Corporation of Minnesota.
Am I? I don't know who I work for. I do like Wisconsin milk and cheese, though. thanks for bringing it up. There's probably some Wisconsin Dairyland cheese around top of this beautiful wood fire roasted pizza here at Roberta's. There we go. Getting all the plugs in. All the plugs in at the top. Wash it down with my delicious Budweiser.
If you need to pimp me out for Wisconsin cheese, I'm ready.
You're the guy. Okay, so you broker these relationships somehow and at least get them started. But then where does that go?
It's really up to the brands and to the communities that we're working with. So I think what we do a lot of is work with the bartending communities of, I mean, specifically in Boston, but now we're doing it all across the country to kind of work with the bartenders, because who we are and what we want has changed so much and continues to change. So try to figure out what our community wants and then come to the brands with a plan, with a proposal, as opposed to letting some, you know, group of marketing people under a mountain somewhere out in Colorado make a decision about, you know, what the whole national strategy for a brand's going to be. So right. Saying this is what bartenders want and this is what they, you know, how we're going to interact with them. And instead of that, we sort of flip the script and say, like, this is actually what our community wants. Like, do you want to be the people that bring it to us or do you want us to go to somebody else?
Right. Can you throw me, like, an example of something you've done recently that was that would outline what you just described?
Yeah, of course. So basically, I'm a huge nerd, in case that's not clear already. And I really love...
we all are. Come
yeah,
on.
Exactly.
That's why we're here talking on the radio. Come on.
Yeah.
But
Radio. the broadcast media for nerds.
Yeah. So essentially, like, you know, I found that I was visiting a lot of distilleries, as an example, because I wanted to learn more about distillation. And I got to a place where I would always get to, like, a point, and then it would sort of be like yada yada yada, and then we put it in a barrel. And I wasn't happy with that conversation, even though I kept visiting with distilleries. I kept kind of like, it's like at a restaurant where you kind of give them hints, you kind of explain, like, hey, I get it, like, I work in this restaurant industry, or I appreciate food, like, I want to, like, break through your sort of script and say, like, I have a personal experience where, like, I'm not afraid to eat weird food, so, like, throw some crazy stuff at me because I'm ready. And the same thing at distilleries, I would kind of be like, okay, I get it. Like, I can speak the language. I understand the parts of a still. Like, I don't need to hear that bourbon is 51% corn. I want to, like, get into, like, what you do and how it's different. So I didn't see that opportunity despite traveling a lot, and we ended up basically finding a small local distillery in Boston who the distiller is a PhD industrial chemist, and he and I built a new curriculum together basically for this thing we called Distilling Academy. So it's a 4-week hands-on chemistry-driven distillation class for bartenders with no yada, yada, yada. So you start with a raw material and you finish barreling a single barrel and there's nothing hidden or separate. You do the whole process. So I sort of saw that wasn't available. I realized that I wanted to do that. And I said, if I want to do it, I'm sure there's other people out there who want to do it too.
Cool.
Wow. How often is that? Is that once a year as well?
That happens twice a year.
Twice a year.
So
how many students do you take?
It's 10.
10. So 20 students a year.
Yeah, and we've had 8 classes so far. So there's 80 bartenders who have gone through the same 4-week class. And now, you know, the way that our community works is people are moving all around the country. So we have, like, graduates from our class who now live in L.A., San Francisco, you know, wherever else in New York. And we're just continuing that process. So it's really exciting, and it's, like, a super small thing, but it's, like, it's something that I'm really passionate about.
And what's it called again?
It's called Distilling Academy.
The Distilling Academy. I want to go.
Yeah, me too.
4 weeks, though.
So we're working on some... this is a perfect transition. So,
where I have 4 weeks laying around.
Basically, we're working on a new version of it that is sort of like, think about like a cooking show instead of like waiting.
Never seen a cooking show.
Yeah, theoretically, if you'd ever read about a cooking show. basically, like, instead of it being...
I listen to radio about cooking shows.
Bunch of nerds. So, like, instead of it being like every part of the process, it's sort of like, okay, we start fermentation and then, like, you open the oven and it's already cooked kind of thing. So
sure.
We're working on kind of an accelerated version of that, which I think transitions well. And we talked a little bit about Thirst, but a new project we have with Thirst this year, it's called Thirst Scholars, which is kind of our way of expanding out Thirst to beyond just New England. We haven't really talked about what Thirst is.
I was about to say, let's talk about Thirst first. Thirst first, then Thirst Scholars. What is Nick Korn, what is Thirst? Thirst Boston.
Well, Thirst is a thing when you want a liquid.
Yeah.
Speaking of which.
Oh, yeah, we have some.
Cool.
But Thirst Boston is a cocktail festival that we hold in Boston, and it's a celebration of the food and beverage communities of Boston and New England. So we try to, like, throw the doors open, not just say it's the same kind of micro echo chamber of the top tier, you know, kind of people you read about in articles, but it includes, you know, people in the industry. It includes, like, people on the street who just enjoy drinking and enjoy cocktails or want to learn about it. And it also includes people from all throughout New England. So we really, like, cast the net a little bit wider than just the Metro Boston area. And it's in its fourth year. It's basically seminars, classes, tastings during the day, and parties and events in the evening.
Rad.
Yeah, I'm into that.
Let's do that.
I feel like you...
2 weeks, we go up there. Mm-hmm. Everything will be set for me in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, opening a bar is easy. You can just set it and forget it. Anyone can do it. Right?
I recommend it to everyone. Everyone go open your own bar.
It's similar to a cocktail festival, you know. Only we have, like, I think we have over 40 events with 70 different sponsors this year. So it's a really easy, kind of simple, straightforward organization, if you can imagine.
Simple. Yeah, that sounds simple.
Yeah.
How many attendees do you have? How many do you have? Do you know how many you're going to have this year? By ticket sales, obviously, right?
Yeah, so we have all different kinds of opportunities, like I kind of said. So during the day is, like, really education. And we partnered with, like, a adult education center that's, like, actual classrooms with teaching kitchens and tasting panels. So the classrooms are actually really small. I think all of us have been to cocktail festivals. Some people out there, if anyone listens to this radio podcast, have not been there.
There's three or four.
Well, like, you know, 40% of you guys have been to a cocktail festival. And basically, the problem is you end up with these huge rooms. You end up with, like, sort of a PowerPoint presentation in a hotel function room with sample-sized cocktails. And I don't know about both of you guys. You both run very successful bars in New York. Did you learn how to bartend from watching a PowerPoint presentation?
Nope. I learned from listening to the radio programs like this.
Yeah, same.
We all did. Yeah.
No, clearly. I understand what you're saying. Like, it sounds like a radically different experience based on just sheer size, which is, you know, I guess that's the damnable misery of kind of anything, right? You start something, it becomes successful, people dig it, and then it gets too big for itself, but there's kind of nothing you can do about it. So that's probably the future of Thirst Boston, too, right? 10 years from now, it'll be bigger than it wants to be.
Never.
But right now, it's in that pocket size that's delightful.
Well, we've been very conscious about how we grow. And the idea is, like, let's do fewer things better. I think the same thing's true. Like, I mean, to plug your restaurant, you know, there's opportunity.
Bar.
Your bar.
I'll serve food.
I've had a snack there. But the idea is, like, you know, you don't have to be everything for everyone. You don't have to let everyone in the door. Like, figure out what you do. Do it really well. And we try to do that with Thirst. And we literally have classes for someone who's never made a cocktail in their life before, all the way up to people who have been in this industry for a decade. And it's different things for different people, and we try to make the classes really clear as to, like, this is an introduction,
what your expectation is,
or this is, like, a deep dive, like, thing. And so
I love this model. I mean, you know, I taught at the New England Culinary Institute for 2 years up in Montpelier, Vermont, and similarly, that school has the ethos of, like, we've looked at all the other schools and they're huge. And so at that school, it's 9-person maximum per class.
Well, that's awesome.
Which you all go through the same tract together. So you start on day one together as 9, right? And then there's always attrition. So by the time you're a senior, the senior classes are sometimes 4 people.
That's,
like, it's
insane.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So you're getting a lot of one-on-one contact, a lot of hands-on with the work. So I see what you're saying. Like, the model is more practical than theoretical. Right.
Totally.
You go to, you know, some of these other things, and you're right. You're in this massive hall, and you got, you know, miniature cocktails are already set up for you on the table when you walk in, and there's a PowerPoint presentation, and you're sipping on them, and people are kind of coming and going and leaving. And, you know, like, but when it's down to just you and a handful of other people, you stay and you engage.
Totally. And that's sort of what we're doing is, like,
not that I don't like those other things, too. I still get something from them. You know, I'm always the guy who says, well, no matter what I do, I'm not going to learn less. Right. I'm not going to unlearn. I'm not going to unlearn stuff.
Yeah.
I'll always pick up something.
You can try for sure. yeah. So pardon me. So for the sort of the process of Thirst, because I'm a nerd and I listen to the radio, I
established.
We said, like, OK, Thirst is this opportunity. But just like anything, if you're going to open a bar, you should go to 100 different bars and look at how they run it and what they do and what makes them special and what's successful and what's not. So in the process of sort of becoming more and more involved in Thirst, I took it upon myself to go to as many cocktail festivals as I can. So 2 years ago, I went to 10 cocktail festivals, which I wouldn't necessarily recommend. Most brand people who get paid to go to cocktail festivals just cringe when they hear that number. And I volunteered at some, I took classes at some, I taught at some, I was a sponsor at some, I coordinated events. So I got to see these different festivals from a lot of different sides, and just took obsessive notes. And then we sort of had a bunch of meetings about how can we take all of these principles, take all the learnings? Like, some of these festivals are around for 11, 12 years. They've figured out what works for them, and they've sort of settled into some processes, and we can look at them and say, is this settled into a process because it's successful, or is it because of inertia that this is just how they started doing it? So we put everything on the table, we questioned everything, and we sort of rebuilt a festival how we wanted it to be based on the best little pieces we saw everywhere. And so a part of that was this PowerPoint thing. Like, we, I wouldn't say pressure, but we encourage our presenters to not do PowerPoint presentations unless it's
I'm your guy. I've presented several times. I've never done a PowerPoint in my life. They always ask me, what kind of AV equipment do you need? I'm like, nothing. I'm just going to get up there and talk.
Yeah. I was like, I have a loud voice. I don't even need a microphone. Like,
kind of. Yeah. I'll just do this.
And so that's one thing. The hands-on teaching kitchens, like, it's so important for us. Like, I didn't really see that in any of the festivals that I went to. And I said, like, you know, if I want to learn about Japanese ice carving, about garnishes, about balancing cocktails, about how to use a porthole, you know, like, I want to do it and taste it and see it and have someone who's like you said, there's nine people in the room and that person can come over and engage with me.
I think you know, that smaller group, you're more willing to engage. You know, if it's a larger group, you feel embarrassed to raise your hand or ask a dumb question in front of, you know, 100 people. But, like, even if you feel like your question's pretty asinine, yeah, there's only nine people in the room, you're a little bit more brave, maybe.
And then we have a few other
which generates further conversation. You know, I've absolutely always encouraged dumb questions, because the dumb question, even if it's a dumb question, it leads to a good question. Someone else will get sparked from that.
Totally. Know? And we have a few other models that we do. Like, we have this thing we call industry roundtables. And so it's only open to people who work in the restaurant industry, but it can be cooks, servers, hostesses, whomever. It's capped at like 12 people, and you just sit around a room with a presenter. So the presenter's not allowed to stand up. They're not allowed to bring a PowerPoint presentation, and they're not allowed to serve cocktails. So it's just like, let's sit in a table and have a conversation. The other thing I haven't mentioned is all of the classes at Thirst are 90 minutes long. So it's not like 50 minutes and, okay, we got to hustle and get out of here and turn it over. So the depth of conversation you can have when you have like a real pinnacle of our community who has a huge amount of knowledge sitting down at a table with industry people and just having a conversation. Maybe there's a bottle on the table that they're tasting, but it's not a structured environment. The other thing that we do is called categorical tastings, is we basically pick a category. So we say, like, okay, single malts.
This is my favorite.
And so instead of it being like,
not necessarily single malts, but categories. I love this.
So instead of it being like, okay, well, let's go to a presentation and this is this one company telling us why what they do is the best and nobody else is doing it, and that other company not having a chance to defend itself, we say, like, all of you are going to benefit from people being excited about your category. So if you're a mezcal, you want more people to know what mezcal is, to ask questions about mezcal, and to, like, get out there and try new things. And so what we do is we have a, like, basically a moderator who's a local person, someone from the community, a bartender or a bar manager from Boston or New England, kind of introduce the category. This is what single malts are. This is kind of an overview of the category in case there's people in the room who have no idea at all. And then they introduce each one of their presenters. So as a guest, you have like five glasses in front of you on a tasting mat. And in front of you, you have a dais with five presenters, one from each brand. So they get a chance to lead a tasting of just one glass. So they have to determine, like, they can't taste you on every offering that they have. They have to say, this is the thing that tells the story of my brand.
And the category. Right.
And then
oftentimes you have a mark that tells the story of your brand, but honestly, sometimes kind of bucks the category, but that's kind of your story.
That's cool too. Yeah. So right now, this year, you know, every year we sort of rotate what the categories are. So this year we have cognac, which I think is a horribly misunderstood category. And there's an opportunity for these brands that, like, are not the big two or three brands that we all hear about to sit at a table and at an equal playing field next to those huge houses. We have mezcal, which is like, we're bringing the people that either represent it for the whole country or who actually make it or blend it to come and talk about what it is that they are. And then obviously, if each one of them is presenting a glass, then it turns into a discussion. It turns into questions and answers. There's enough time for it to become, like, I want the guests to leave and say, like, man, mezcal or single malt or cognac or Amari are so much more complicated than I ever expected, and, like, catch the bug, because that's what we all want. I mean, as bartenders, you want to get someone to, like, see something in a new way and then, like, go off on their own and keep digging into it.
Absolutely. Well, we're about a little past halfway, so we're going to take a quick break. We're going to hear from Wisconsin Milk and Cheese Board.
I love Wisconsin.
I could go for a cheese board right now.
We kind of have one right there in front of us.
Yeah, Roberto's Pizza. All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back. We're going to continue to talk about Thirst Boston. We're also just going to talk about Offsite and Nick Korn himself.
Cool.
So stay tuned.
Thank you. Today's program is brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, period. Why? Lush grasslands, glacial water supply, fourth generation cheesemakers, combining old world tradition with the new ideas and highest standards. The very best milk. What do you think of when you think of Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh cheese curds or deep fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Upland's Cheese Company, the operation behind the Pleasant Ridge Reserve cheese that's literally America's most awarded cheese. I think of the deliciously stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think about Raleigh's Dumbarton Blue, a perfect blend of English-style cheddar and notes of blue. I think of Emmy Roth's Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Champion at the World Championship Cheese Contest. Wisconsin is like the world champion of cheese, and once you start reading the list of cheeses made in Wisconsin on their website, you can see why. The Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board is a nonprofit organization funded entirely by Wisconsin's dairy farm families. Read more at eatwisconsincheese.com. And as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, eat Wisconsin cheese. It's a no-brainer.
All right. We are back.
Yeah, no-brainer. Thanks, Jack. I miss that guy.
Yeah, me too.
I'm sure you do. I only got to work with him for like 6 months.
I got a chance to go to Madison this past year, and true to form, every meal I had and every dish was covered in melted cheese, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
So good. They put it in, that's like part of the Wisconsin Old Fashioned, right? It's like brandy-based, but then it's like, it has cheese curds.
Cheese curds float.
Just a garnish, just a, you know?
Cheese curds on a pick, you know?
It needs to be more cheese garnishes and drinks.
As long as the curds are squeaky, that's what I learned. It's very important.
Oh.
Yeah.
An insider tip.
You don't want those old curds that have lost their squeak.
Like when you bite on them, they squeak? Or when you...
Yeah, you feel it like in your teeth. Like it's like, it squeaks. It's crazy.
All right.
That's how you know it's fresh.
Eat some poutine?
I did. I ate every
cheese curds.
I did have a breakfast where it was an omelet that was covered in melted cheese, and the server asked me if I wanted gravy on it. Which was something that no one...
like, well, fuck yeah, dude.
I was like, how have I...
What are you doing here? Give me the gravy.
I'm sort of offended that it didn't come with it.
Yeah. I was like, how have I gone through this many years of my life not putting gravy on cheese-covered eggs? Like, I'm like, of course. It's like a full circle. It's the chicken and the egg all together, you know?
Yeah.
It's true. Wow. The whole farm.
Yeah. when it comes to breakfast, the chicken is into it, but the pig is committed.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back with Nick Korn and my terrible dad jokes. And you busted out while we went on that quick break a little flask, a vintage flask, though, I see, that it has a... I was about to read it, and you snatched it out of my hand. In Italian, it says, Vini Aromas... Oh, Jesus. Aromatizzati? I've never seen that before.
Your pronunciation is impeccable, Southern.
Aromatizzati.
All you have to do is, like... Twist your mustache.
Vini aromatizzati.
Imagine you just say like a half a pizza and then you could say it better. Yeah.
So it's Don Barrio Elixir Amaro. So Elixir Amaro from Don Barrio in Italy. And it's in this little flask that we... You have an idea how old this is?
Old.
No, it's old. Okay.
It looks like...
So I figured this was... I think you just swig at it. Yeah. So I figured this was the perfect thing to bring you, Souther, because... Yeah. I had a feeling that you kind of like drinking bitter things and Amari.
Yeah.
And that you, I've seen also that you love like the sort of dusty culture. So the idea.
Dusty
of,
culture. That was my wrestling name in high school.
That's, yeah, see, I'll take it. So basically, like there's a sort of like undercurrent of our industry of people trying to find, you know, new and weird things. There's people doing it on like a large brand side where they're like traveling, trying to find the new thing that they want to import. And then on the sort of personal bartender side, which Souther, I know that you do this too, like the hunt of trying to find some old dusty bottle. And there's all sort of like rules that people make for themselves. Like I can't like buy it on eBay or go to a...
Yeah, people do make rules for themselves.
Or like...
I don't. If I see something I like, I buy it.
Or like go to an estate sale. Like there's something about the hunt of like I'm going to a liquor store and this bottle is like sitting on the shelf. Like thousands of people have seen this bottle and walked right by it and didn't get it. And you pick it up and there's like that ring around the bottom because it's like literally dusty.
Yeah.
So I found this liquor store in Italy when I was there in December. And basically, it had been a candy and liquor store in this downtown area. And
nothing goes better with liquor than candy.
Candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker.
There we go. That's it. I hope that was the name of the place.
It was in Italian, so I assume so. Yes.
That's what it was in Italian.
And basically, like the couple had bought it. It had been shuttered for like 5 or 6 years. And before that, the owner had had it for like 40 years. And so they bought the thing hook, line, and sinker, including all this inventory. And there was like a shelf along the top of the whole building that just had old stuff up there. And I was like, do you guys have a stepladder? And they're like, sure. And I spent like 30 minutes there just digging through things, including a giant case like of minis. So, like, you know, you see those old, like, there's a few bars, at least in Boston, that have, like, a display case of all these gorgeous old minis, but they're not for sale. Yeah. They're just, like, a decor piece. That. This was, like, yeah, go
I
for that. It.
The one thing I am for sure is a consumer, not a collector. I hate when I go places and see that they have stuff that's just for looks. Look that. It's made to be drank.
Exactly.
Anyway, let's talk about this real fast. We're passing the bottle because we don't have any glasses in the studio today, but.
It's down Biro. B-I-R-O.
Yeah, Biro is a city like near, it's a part of the city of Torino in Piemonte. So northwest Italy.
But I've seen this one before, by the way.
It makes me really sad.
Where'd you see it?
They have a bottle of it at Frankie's Spuntino in Brooklyn.
Shameless plug.
Yeah, well, not shameless.
Not shameless, no.
Just normal. Normal plug.
Normal
plugs for friends and colleagues. Normal plugs for friends and colleagues.
Yeah.
But for me, did you get this? It smells very savory.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oddly, the flavor is kind of
vibrant.
Nutty and a little bit mapley.
Yeah.
It's and cool. Something that's been sitting bitter. In a bottle for that long that still is that bright and has that much character. You generally like
some,
that thing tastes pretty yummy.
Yeah.
But I'm with you, Souther. Booze is made to be drunk, so like
yeah, whenever every, I
just
get
open
a hold
it.
Of
yeah.
Whenever I get a hold of something, I'm actually there's a half the smaller half of me is a little bit pissed that I get to have it because it should have been drank already.
Yeah.
The bigger half of me, of course, is happy that I get to drink it because someone overlooked it or whatever. But, you know, I don't understand why things get overlooked or why things get forgotten or whatever. Anyway, let's talk more about you and your endeavors.
Oh, geez.
So you just gave us a pretty solid rundown of Thirst Boston, which makes everybody want to come up to your fair city.
Well, I wanted to say
April 28th through the 30th.
I like that. That's
shameful
shameless. Plug.
Yeah.
Also, if you want more information, it's at thirstboston.com.
God, you guys are getting on the payroll pretty soon.
What is Thirst Boston, anyway?
In addition to all
New
the
England's
classes...
premier cocktail festival.
Woo! in addition to all the classes and seminars and stuff that we talked about, there's also, like, parties and events. Like, at the end of the day, it's a balance, right? We want to have fun. Booze doesn't have to be serious all the time, but if you want to get serious about booze, we offer that to you, too. So, basically, on Saturday, we have this event called State Lines, and the idea is it's like a state fair that's all booze-themed. So, we...
I want to ride the go-karts.
There's a breathalyzer, so it's troublesome. But basically, so there's booths that have, you know, carnival games. They have, like, you know, silly fried food. They have people who are making, like, aprons and bar tools and hand-blowed tiki mugs.
Cool, man.
And then there's pavilions dedicated to each state of greater New England. So we're bringing in bartenders from all the states of New England. So Connecticut, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, and upstate New York. And they're basically building, like, a pop-up immersive bar, probably about the size of a Maria Margo, and they get to, like, kind of showcase what it is that they're doing. So as a guest, you are in Boston, you walk into this space, you're in, like, a fair, and you can go to, like, the Vermont Pavilion and see four awesome bartenders from Vermont who are crushing it and get to hear about the bars they work at, taste some of the cocktails that they make, and sort of travel around New England and get excited that, like, it's not just Boston, but there's some really cool stuff happening in all the other states.
That sounds fucking rad.
Yeah, man. I want, like, a funnel cake that's, like, drenched in rum.
See, now you're talking. Exactly, right?
Yeah, I get it. Like, fast pitch. Like,
right. Yeah.
Did you ever
beer brats and fast pitch?
Did you ever do fast pitch? Like,
of course, yeah.
You have to.
Yeah, like, then you have to guess the third ball. It's impossible.
You said, you know, it was like state fair, but with alcohol. It's like, to me, it's like state fair always involved. And it was usually in a bottle about the size that we're drinking out of now.
Yeah.
And we would do fast pitch, but you would, like, shotgun a beer, and then your friends would spin you around, like, three times, and you'd have to throw the ball.
That's Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's wholesome family fun right
there.
Yeah,
man. It was
lovely. We were
that
talking
sounds
about
amazing. That's amazing. I mean, I've never heard of anything like that. That sounds great. I love the idea of having five small bars throughout the thing that represent a different state and have bartenders from their state and they're doing their thing from their bar. That's great.
People kept asking, like, is there a Massachusetts pavilion? And I was like, no. Like, they're at a bunch of other events. They're already here. You can go to their bar. It's right down the street. It's like, this is the idea of this is, like, we're trying to throw, you know, to invite people who are really, like, showcasing that, like, You know, like, go to, like, Burlington, Vermont. Go to Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Go to Kittery, Maine. Go, like, travel around. Go to Westport, Rhode Island. Or Westport, Connecticut. And, like, there are awesome bars who are really crushing it. And not to mention they're in, like, they're out on their own. You know, they're doing God's work in terms of, like, guests are coming in and not understanding what they're up to. And it becomes this really awesome opportunity to kind of explain, to educate, to be hospitalitarians, and to, like, encourage people into this, like, it's not a pretentious world. It's, like, we want to show you all this cool stuff that we're doing. So we're trying to bring in all these people and for them to come to Boston and see, get to visit the bars in Boston that are doing this and get to see the other bars who are doing it in other kind of cities. We're creating connections between these sort of like little up and coming communities.
I mean, you know, I didn't say it before, but everything you've talked about seemingly really falls into that, the old phrase, right? A high tide raises all boats. It sounds like you're just trying to lift everybody up and in doing so, it lifts you up as well.
Like you are doing God's work actually.
Yeah. Oh.
My God drinks a lot of whiskey.
Yeah.
And then the other event that we do, because not everything's educational and not everything has to be about community and like, you know, and thinking about fast pitch is on Sunday night, our sort of closing night party is called the Gender Bender Blender Bender, which people always ask me to say three times fast. And I say that I can definitely do it because I've said it 1,000 times now. And the idea is it's 36 bartenders, all from like the greater Boston area, making frozen drinks in a nightclub and everyone's in drag.
Awesome. 36 bartenders making blender drinks in drag at a nightclub in Boston.
How can that not be fun?
Say it again. Gender Bender Blender Bender.
You got it. It's easy, right?
Gender Bender Blender Bender.
Sponsored by Vitamix.
Yeah, so the winning team, awesome. Like there's basically teams of three bartenders. They each get their own Vitamix.
Damn, that's a great prize.
Yeah, Vitamix is
Vitamix
like,
is the shit.
They are awesome, and they've been a great supporter. The Blender Bender's in its fourth year, and they've supported it every single year. They're awesome.
Cool. Vitamix is a rad tool for kitchen or bar. That's the standard.
Yeah, so now there's all these bartenders.
That's not a plug at all. I'm just saying I've used them in the past in both the front and the back of the house.
Now there's bartenders all over Boston who just like have a Vitamix in their kitchen in their apartment, you know, or they're using it on their bar or whatever, but it's like, you know, if they're really showcasing and bringing the thunder with this event, then like we want to award them. So
yeah, I hope they're using it on their bars.
I can, man.
That's amazing.
Awesome.
So Thirst Boston takes up a chunk of your time every year.
I mean, it's this month, so it's particularly top of mind, I suppose.
But you do other junk too. Stuff. You do other
we
stuff.
We do lots
too.
Of garbage for sure.
Yeah. We got this one gym and then a bunch of rat's nest stuff.
I mean, Thirst is once a year and we're a full-time company. So Offsite runs programs all over the country all year long. But the sort of heart and soul of what we do is very similar. It's that it's, you know, working with the communities, like working with the bartending and up and coming restaurant communities to, if we can, like leverage those relationships and get the brands to like support things that we actually want. And sometimes they're super educational and a deep dive tasting. And sometimes they're just a party like the Blender Bender. Or
that sounds fun.
We do a party or an event called the International Cocktail Karaoke Championship that Souther was
able to join us for. To do that. I was a judge for that.
So it's nice. Bartenders pick a song, they make a cocktail inspired by the song, and then they make the drink and sing the song on stage at the same time.
In teams. Most of them were in teams.
They're in teams, yeah. They have to be in teams.
Oh, it has to be a team, yeah.
Yeah. Just like a band, you know, not everyone has to play the drums, not everyone has to sing, but like somebody's got to make a cocktail and some people have to sing. And if it's New York, some people have to dance on rollerblades or whatever.
Yeah, there was a team that was on rollerblades dancing the whole time. It was incredible.
So we're doing that's one program that we do. We're doing that in 9 cities across North America this year, including like Canada, Mexico and Puerto Rico. So that's going to be really rad.
Nice.
So other than Thirst Boston, what's your favorite thing you do or have done recently?
Man, well, I think the Distilling Academy that we already talked about is a thing that's like near and dear to my heart.
Sure.
That I really love. But we get to do really cool stuff. I think we're starting, I kind of treat the business like a restaurant, like to start up a restaurant and like open the doors. Like, sure, you can get like a little push off the bat, but then you need to like, you need to deliver and you need to bring people back and give them better and better and better experiences. So, and also like a restaurant, like once we passed the 2-year mark, I was like, okay, like I can take a little bit of a breath. Like, you know, so many restaurants closed before that 2-year mark. So now we're just over 3 years old and we're starting to get that repeat business. We have clients who we've worked with for 3 years, who are seeing, you know, who are growing and growing and growing their involvement and are trusting us more. So like we're sort of moving up that chain and like we're sitting in meetings with important people who wear way nicer suits than I do, and who are making giant decisions, who are moving, you know, giant programs around. And we get to be part of that conversation and sort of be the arbiter of our community, where they say, like, okay, we're going to do this bartender community or this bartender event, and it's going to be X, Y, and Z because we want to achieve this. And we can sort of be like, is that really what we want to do? Like, if your goals are really this, like, can we work with you to build a new program? So we've gotten a chance to really build some new stuff from the ground up.
Where does all this creativity come? Does that come from you, from them? Where does the where do these ideas come from?
I've got a lot of, we call them good, bad ideas. Which are, yeah, I think, which
that's
are...
That's what I have.
I think you have some good, bad ideas yourself. I think bad, good ideas can be very dangerous, but good, bad ideas can be really fun. And the key for good, bad ideas is you just have to, you have to hustle and pull through. So you can come up with the dumbest, stupidest, craziest, harebrained idea, and if you run with it and you get everyone committed to it and you execute it higher than anyone expected, then it's a thing. Cocktail karaoke is like the dumbest idea. It's something that
was pretty dumb. And then he was just like, "Hey, you want to judge this thing?" And I was like, "Yeah, that sounds dumb." I'll totally do
and
that.
And it's really fun, and like people buy into it. But it was like the first
everyone bought into it, man. These teams were in costumes and fucking rehearsed and practiced. It was crazy. So
cool. It's costumes, choreography, cocktails, craziness. It's really fun. And one of our, what Souther hasn't mentioned, is one of his co-judges was a local female impersonator.
Yeah.
Who at every stop we have sort of three judges. We have a cocktail judge.
That was me.
We have a like a musicianship judge who generally is like a local musician, or and then we have a fabulous judge who's generally a female impersonator.
Fabulous.
And our fabulous judge in New York, her name was Peppermint. And first of all, she got up and sang, which was awesome. Amazing. Secondly, when she sang, she broke into like beatbox in the middle of her song, which
she was,
I didn't know that beatboxing,
this is a performer.
I didn't know that a beatboxing drag queen was like a thing that I really wanted in my life. But now that I've seen it, that's all I really want. And third, she's on the current season of the RuPaul Drag Race, which is like a huge thing.
Wow.
She's like a celebrity among her community now. And I can only assume that the cocktail karaoke is really what pushed her slingshotted over her into
slingshotted her into her current
into notoriety. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was a blast. And you know, again, it seems like everything you do is super creative, and you know, you haven't listed a single thing that I thought to myself, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah,
like, I feel like everything you've said, I'm like, damn, I wish I could do that. I want to go do that, which I think is like key to the thing you were talking before we got on the show about how you related this to sort of the idea of how film festivals have gone in the past and how every little town used to have one and now kind of only the big ones remain, and what makes them remain is that they have either something that's very definitive about them or a singularity of purpose. And it sounds like that's what you're trying to instill into every one of your events, is that like there's something about this event that's different than any other, and that's what's going to make it survive.
I can't believe you just used that term, because that's a thing that I say all the time.
Which term?
Singularity of purpose.
Oh, okay.
I remember like when I was in college and I watched like the person who's like, I'm pre-med and I'm going to go to like med school and I'm going to be a doctor and that's all I want to do. And there's like the person who is going to be an engineer, so they take all physics classes and they go to, you know, grad school and they become an engineer. And my whole life I was like jealous of that singularity of purpose. Like, I didn't have that. I've always like been like, you know, like to spread it around. I have a lot of different interests that go in very, very different directions, and so for years I sort of like jumped between those different categories. And what I love about what I do now is it's sort of like an amalgamation of all those things. It's event planning, it's creativity, like my background in photography and graphic design, it's bartending, which is something I really love, and it's this sort of community building, which I've also spent a lot of time doing. So I sort of never found the one thing I wanted, so instead I created a new thing that kind of jammed all the things I love together. And
seems like it's doing well for you.
And in terms of like,
you're just a late bloomer, that's all.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think part of that is just finding the thing that you really love, and finding, like, I wasn't sure this is the, I mean, none of us are ever sure it's the right thing that we're doing until you reach a point where you have that like diagnostic moment that kind of tells you like, this is the thing I'm supposed to do. And like a year ago, not even a year ago, recently I got offered a job that a previous iteration of myself, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, if I got offered that job, like that was my dream job. That was the thing like I had on the mantle that like I've always wanted. And it just like was offered to me straight up. And I immediately, without even having to think about it, was like, I can't do that. No. Like, that's when your dream job is no longer your dream job because the thing you're doing is the thing that you really love. That's when you know, like, you're doing the right thing.
Amazing.
Wow, dude. You, like, boil that down into a single sentence and make it Awesome.
It could be on a t-shirt or something, maybe a bumper sticker.
Absolutely a t-shirt. I'd buy that shirt.
Be really tiny font.
Boil it down to the one thing and stick with it or something like that. Just, you know.
I heart bitters. That's how it narrows it down.
That's how it works for me. Well, dude, you are a great guest, man. We've really enjoyed having you on.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
We're getting towards the end. We're going to wrap it up. But I'll mention again, Thirst Boston, April 28th through the 30th, 2017. And it's at thirstboston.com. This is Boston.
It's also an awesome opportunity for someone who may have never been to Boston, or even more than people who haven't been, it's someone who's been but hasn't been in 5 or 10 years. Because I love meeting those people, and they're like, oh, I went to Boston once. It was 10 years ago. And I'm like, cool, what'd you do? And they're like, well, I was visiting my friend who was in college, and we went to some shitty college bars.
Cheers.
And
like I was telling you what I did last time.
Yeah, and then they're like, but it was okay. No, and I'm like, ugh, like, come back. Let me have a chance to, like, show you what the city's like. And I am, like, if I'm nothing, I'm not, like, an advocate for my community. And I am so excited about the food and beverage community and the explosion that's happening in Boston. And also seeing the echo of what's happening in our city, happening in smaller and smaller cities. So I love traveling the country and going to, like, Madison, Wisconsin, or going to Birmingham, Alabama, or going to Tampa, going to all these, like, kind of cities that people that are not the big, you know, metropolitan.
But they're at the tipping point. They're about to roll
in. But they're crushing it, and they're where Boston was, you know, when I started up in this community, and I've seen where we've gone to, and I'm so excited to watch these cities kind of come up, and I want to be able to help and to offer advice or to just come and eat and drink at their restaurants, because, like, they're turning the corner right now.
Amazing. All right, Thirst Boston, April 28th through the 30th, thirstboston.com. Nick Korn, thank you so much for being on the show. Next week, we have Heather Ash on from Tequila Tromba. I'm going to give you a little list. I've been doing a little legwork, man. The following week, we have Peter Nevangloski on. He's from Avoir Cachaça. The following week is the 3rd of May, which is the first Wednesday, or the last Wednesday before Derby Day. So we got some super special guests on for that one. What does that say? What are you hiding from me?
No. Yeah.
Peter Fortunatale, who you had on the show before I was on the show, right? He wrote the book
Brooklyn Spirits.
Brooklyn Spirits, and he's also got a radio show of his own called The Daily Racing Form. Mm-hmm. Right, and he knows everything there is to know about the ponies. And he and Dale DeGroff just did a recent thing together where they talked about how the history of American whiskey and the history of horse racing intertwine a lot. So they've got this little program going that they're going to take around.
Yeah,
the show.
I want that.
Really fucking cool. I went to it.
I would watch that pony show.
But while I was at that thing, I went up to the both of them and I said, you guys should come talk about this on our little radio show. So they're going to be here the Wednesday that precedes the Derby. Oh, by the way, Dale's a massive race fan. He goes to the tracks all the time. And also, I told Dale, since he did it before when he was on the show, to bring his guitar. I'm telling you to bring your guitar.
Yeah, I'm going
to
do it.
Everybody listening is going to get to hear you and Dale play some guitar together. And hell then yeah. I'm going to ask you to bring your guitar the following week as well. We got Matt Friedlander from Sweetwater Social. He's a rock and roll nerd.
And oh, yeah, man.
And then the week after that, we got Austin Henley and Julie Renee Williams, who both currently live down in Costa Rica and run the Hotel Belmar in a lot of different capacities, both in and out of the bar and kitchen.
Oh, yeah, man.
So we've got a lot of great shows coming up. I know I kind of gushed
all those
over
vacations for you. Have just really.
I know I kind of gushed over Peter and Dale, but that's going to be a great one not to be missed prior to the race. You know, you want to hear that one before the race. I know a lot of people save the shows and archive them and listen to them whenever they have time. But you want to listen to that one live, I think, and hear some music. And then finally, I just have one little sweet thing to mention. The week you were gone, I came into here and there was a bottle sitting on the studio desk. Copperworks Distillery out in Seattle from a guy named Jeff Kanoff. He just wrote us a sweet little note that said, I really enjoy your show, guys. Thank you so much. And I work at this distillery, and here's a bottle of my juice. Single malt American whiskey made in Seattle. I didn't crack it open yet. You and I will drink it
all right
soon.
Sounds good, man.
Anyway.
That's my kind of fan mail right there.
Yeah, right? Yes. Send more fan mail, people. So there you go. That's all I've got. What do you got?
I think you covered it all, buddy. I'm just going to leave my guitar here.
Yeah, for 2 weeks at least.
2 weeks. Yeah, man.
Maybe you should open every show with a little ditty. You kind of do.
Kind of do. That is my band's song. It's called Whiskey. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but the opening song for the show is called Whiskey and Loose Women by Brothers. That's my band. So that's the reason why it's the theme song.
Yeah, your band. Your band, Brothers, with your brother.
Yep.
Save some money on licensing, right?
So I'm going to see you next weekend out in San Francisco. I'm not going to do any guest bartending, but I'm going to go pop around and see a bunch of my buddies.
You guys doing any gigs? Playing anywhere?
We're going to Big Sur.
All right. Sounds like boring. No, it sounds awesome. All right, but you'll be back for the show.
I'll be here before I'm leaving that night after the show.
Okay, cool. All right, so again, next week, Heather Ash. Thanks so much for listening to Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. If you like this show, please join. Please tune in for thousands more just like it at heritageradionetwork.org. And if you've got the time and the inclination and the money, up in the right-hand corner, there's a spot where you can press to donate some money to keep shows like this on the air. And we thank you for listening. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Thank you.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the air.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.